Big edition of The Breakfast Club. It's great to have your company. If you missed any of the good stuff, here's a snippet of what we did.
Adam White, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning to you, Daniel Hufford.
Great to have your company. Jim Bartel is a Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist, Superstar Life medalist, and he's also an MRP main man. That's what he is. Main man. He joins us again. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Harper. I like that third one. You've got me up and about on that. Life medalist.
You're a life medalist. You are.
Do I bring good brekkie convo, do I?
You do? Yeah. Your stories of breakfast are very good.
They're a little bit left of centre, to be honest.
Except when you attack giraffes.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that was a bit of a setback for the giraffe community. just salt on their character.
Look, they don't bring a lot to the table, to be honest.
Who else is going to eat all that food up top?
Well, I don't know. We spoke about this. They're the list clogger on the arc.
No, they're not the list clogger on the arc.
They are. What are they bringing to the table? We could get
height.
Yeah, but we can get
they're
by.
They're good at stoppages.
Good at stoppages. We can get by with the tops of the trees being trimmed.
Who's going to trim them?
The wind?
Nah, the wind's not going to trim them, mate.
No, a storm will come by. And
you need things to eat.
And then autumn, the leaves fall, so they're useless for 3 months of the year.
Not all leaves fall.
Most trees.
Not most, some.
Oh, well, it seemed to be in my backyard. I have to rake the buggers up.
You've got the ornamental pears happening.
Yeah. Fake trees. Might just concrete the whole backyard. Might be a lot easier.
Fake trees? What the hell's going on here?
I don't know. We got on the giraffes and why we hate them. But anyway, it's a great Tuesday. What are we talking about?
Now, can I ask you, I'm going to go straight into it, Jimmy.
Oh, good.
The match review panel findings came through very late yesterday afternoon. It seemed that it was a long day at the office for you in going through what you had to go through. Is that because there were a lot of incidents, or it was because there was some heavy debate on a few of the issues?
A bit of both, to be honest. But also, you're waiting on clubs to get back to you as well. So part of when you're measuring impact is obviously the medical report from clubs. Some clubs take a little bit of time to get that back to you. And then also, you're seeking bits of information, from clubs and things alike. So, like I said to Steve, I'm not sure what the rush is. You do it properly, you get it right, and you move on.
You did have a lot on the list, though, a lot of incidents on the list yesterday. It was a pretty deep chart from going by the report yesterday.
There was quite a few on there.
Yeah,
and there's a lot that don't make the paper and things like that you still got to look at. Like, we still have to look at, any time someone leaves the field with a head injury. It could be very simple, like accidental, but you still have to look at it. So you watch it, you check it, you tick it off, and you move on.
So let's go back a step for our listeners that may not be aware of the system. So across the weekend, when people are watching the games, there will be little notes taken about second quarter, 12-minute mark, just have a look at Jimmy Bartel whacking Adam White. I reckon there might be something in it.
Yep.
And there's a list compiled through the weekend, you get that on Sunday night or Monday morning. Is that how it works?
Yeah, late Sunday night you get it. This is what we're going to probably look at on Monday. Sometimes some get added in on Monday because someone said, it's not on the list.
Yep.
You go through, and here's the key thing. The AFL have access to a lot more camera angles and vision and the ability to zoom in on vision and do all sorts of things that you don't get to see on the broadcast vision.
Yep.
So often the broadcast vision in some of them makes it look really bad, and you go, well, let's look at all the angles, and you go, hang on a minute, actually, he's okay. So we had one, there might have been a sling tackle with one, you go, geez, it looks like from that angle he's banged his head in the ground, you actually swing it around to the other side, his head never hits the ground.
Right.
So,
a bit like the Reg Grundy, Luke Hodge situation, the SCG.
Perfect example.
Thought he was whacked in the head because Luke threw his head back a bit.
Yep.
Got nowhere near his head.
Nowhere near it.
Right.
So we get all those camera angles. Is that what you're asking? Go through it. There's five people on the match review panel.
Every week?
Every week.
Righto.
I think there was a 2-week period where Michael Jamieson was away for other commitments, so there was still four people. So it's not just me on there, people.
Yes, it is.
It's not just me. Oh, actually, when Geelong things happen, I tell everyone to leave the room so I can have an influence that way. But
well, that would explain how Josh Sewell got off. We'll get to that shortly.
Yeah, well. So, yeah, we go through it, and there's a lot of debate in there. And I think I even said this before on a previous incident or case. Not even the match review panel is always 100% in agreement.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of debate that goes on.
It's hard to get everyone to agree on the same thing in footy. Doesn't matter what you're looking at or adjudicating. It might be a holding the ball decision, might be a punch in the head, might be which player should be playing where. It's hard to get consensus for everyone in the game of footy. Andrew's in Sorrento. I think you might want to talk to you, Jim, 1300 652 927. Good morning, Andrew.
Morning, boys. I heard Chris Scott describe Alex Rance as one of the greatest of all time in the news bulletin. I think we need to steady on a little bit. Let me preface my comments by saying that I think at the moment he's the premier defender in the competition. But 2 or 3 years ago, Richmond supporters would have their hearts in their mouth every time he went near the ball because he was the turnover king. Just, you need to put together a body of work before you can be considered one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, well, that's a fair point. And we just spoke about opinions. If I was at that game on the weekend and he was enormous against the Swans and playing on Buddy for a fair portion of it. And what's going on, notice, is his combination with David Asprey this year.
Yeah, it is a good combo.
Asprey's had a good year. He was fantastic as well against the Swans. I think he took 13 marks, a lot of them intercepted, and a couple of contested grabs, which are really important in your back six.
I think the defence of Richmond full stop has been very underrated this year. I know Damien Hardwick talked about it last night on the couch, but when you've got some continuity now in your back six, which is what Richmond's got, and they've got three good key defenders of sorts. You've got Asprey and Rance, obviously, that fall into that category, and Grimes can play on a taller player or a smaller player, depending. And you saw that the teamwork between the three of them in being able to change from player to player depending on the circumstance, I thought was outstanding. And that's not something you'd necessarily package Richmond up with, their ability to work so well as a combination in defence.
It's and using the cricket sort of thing, Whitey, it's like they're a good fast bowling lineup. They're three tall defenders because they all offer something different. And you mentioned it, that Grimes can be, you know, right up on the back shoulder. He can defend the lead really well because he's super quick for a tall guy. And Asprey and Rance work really well. It's almost like if you look across the ground, they're almost level with each other. So, yeah, if the play comes down one wing and gets entered in one way, one folds off really well and comes out and helps out. Rance is probably physically stronger, you know, if he gets in the wrestle, whereas Asprey's pretty good in the air.
And I think the thing too, Huff, is that with Asprey, who's missed a lot of footy for a variety of different reasons through injury over the last couple of years, is that him being there on a regular basis allows Rance to be a much more attacking option. And I understand where Andrew's coming from. I think with Rance, he's always been a desperate defender. He's always been a very good stopper, for want of a better term, the ability to read the ball coming in and all that sort of thing. But he was also someone that would fall to ground far too easily, someone that would kick the ball straight back to the opposition. And so while he'd defend a lot of goals, he'd also give up a lot of goals with a lot of the errors he would make. But I think he's been able to fix up a lot of those things over the last couple of years to turn him into the defender he's become.
Your mate Glenn Luff from Champion Data announced on Twitter on the weekend that he was the greatest defender of all time. All time.
It's unlike Luffy to get emotional and make those sorts of comments.
Were they doing this based on how
I assume he didn't go into too much detail, but
on Champion Data data.
Yeah, it must be analysis. So on statistically,
they wouldn't have had Champion Data when there's Silvani and Southby and Dench.
So when he says all time, there is always an asterisk when Champion Data.
You can't have
about
an asterisk with all time.
Well, no, there has to be because there's always an asterisk when they have these conversations because they've only taken them since 1999. So it's in brackets. Since 1999.
So if he did cricket, then you can't include Don Bradman because they didn't have Champion Data.
He's a hack, according to Champion Data.
I think on some of the things that he did on Saturday were inspirational.
His last quarter. Yeah. We talked about huge. Josh Kennedy's last quarter yesterday when we had Nick Newman on the program. And Josh Kennedy was fantastic.
Yeah.
But Alex Rance's last quarter, I don't think there was any one man that's ever done more to try and save a game for his team than Alex Rance in the last quarter on the weekend.
He was enormous. And it was in all ways, like intercept mark, then the ground ball, then repelling. He was actually a brick wall.
But every time it went into Sydney's forward line, Alex Rance was in the television shot. You know, he would just seem to, there seemed to be three or four of them down there in that last quarter.
But and that's on the point you raised, Waddy. Because of the combination now he's got, and they're working so well together with Asprey and Grimes, allows him to get really proactive. So he was just watching the Swans players coming inside their forward half, and he's like, that ball is going to be kicked here. And he just got on his bike and just attacked the contest.
Matthew Scarlett was similar, Jimmy, in that, I'm not going to say he was the first, but he was one of the first where he didn't necessarily play on the best forward. He was someone that obviously played in defence and was a tall player, but you like to use his offensive capabilities as well, and we sort of see that a lot more now where there's this almost criticism, oh, well, he doesn't play on the best forward, but it's not necessarily the point of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that happened a lot more towards the end of Scarlett's career because, well, there for 2 years we had Matt Egan.
Yep.
People forget Matt Egan was the All-Australian centre-half back when the same year he hurt his foot. We had Tom Harley, who was an All-Australian centre-half back, and then we replaced Egan with Harry Taylor. So we were pretty well off for key defenders and good ones that could play that one-on-one, which Scarlett could, but he, one of his most dangerous assets was, as you said, he'd start our attack from the full back line, right back at the full back line.
Dustin Fletcher was another one that would play not necessarily on the best forward.
But that more later in his career?
It was. It was something that...
Mind you, his career went for 44 years.
Yeah. I mean, it was something that Sheedy was quite keen on. And I remember at times he would be criticised because, oh, he's not playing on the best forward, so, you know, can't judge him as the best defender in the game and all that sort of thing. But he would be able to offer so much more for Essendon in defence, not just stop his man.
I think he earned it after, wasn't he, 17, going to school, and then he was playing along Gary Ablett and Tony Lockett.
Dunstall. Yeah, he was. You earned the right to just have a couple of years just to chill out on the third and fourth.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you've played on some of the greatest of all time. But I want to take you back, gentlemen, to last night's football review analysis programs. And one of the favourites, of course, is On the Couch. Now, the big chief was hosting last night because Jerry was off surfing in the Bahamas or wherever he was, whatever he's doing, Jerry. But they had Damien Hardwick on as guest in the opposing chair to Jason. And Tigers have been a good story this year for many reasons. They're playing good footy. They've also lost games they shouldn't have lost, so they're always good fodder. But Damien Hardwick opened up about the review or his self-analysis last year after the season the Tigers had, which we all know was ultra disappointing. And it was a fascinating insight into what coaches go through and how they go about reviewing themselves, let alone having the public and the other football media review them. Let's have a listen to Damien Hardwick, the coach of the Tigers last night.
I wasn't the coach I wanted to be last year. I felt I was, you know, I segregated myself from the players. I was working harder than I had to. I was trying to be, you know, find the solution myself, but in effect I was the problem. I was looking for things and creating things that weren't actually there half the time, and I ended up, you know, being too worried about the micro and not the macro. So, you know, I had a really poor year. I rectified that. You know, we've been really fortunate to bring in some new staff that have reinvigorated me, reinvigorated the playing group, and probably changed our philosophy a little bit about being more of a defensive orientated side, more so than offensive. And I think the numbers probably suggest that as well. But, you know, it's been built up to be something that's big and grand, but it's amazing how quickly things can change by just a couple of percent, you know, working in a different way. And
just brutally honest about his own performance last year as a coach, sat down, reflected upon what he was good at, what he was bad at. But just a really interesting insight, Jim, to hear a coach say that he was detached from his players and he locked himself away from the world and he wasn't the coach he wanted to be. We all know it was a disappointing year for Richmond, but I thought it was unbelievably open and honest for Damien Hardwick to come out and say that last night.
Yeah, it was amazing self-awareness, I think you might have put it, to review your own year that critically. But then the good thing about what he was saying there is he identified things to move on to for this year. So he even, you know, spoke about, let's become more defensive, I was too attacking, I was doing too much work, which you can hear coaches getting into, you know, micromanaging every single little thing, but that's why you have good assistant coaches, you have footy managers. I think probably, you know, Neil Baum coming in, you know, take some of that workload off him, because that's what Geelong did when they reviewed at the end of 06. They thought, you know, Bomber was doing too much of all the little things, so they brought in Barmy to do a lot of that sort of day-to-day operational stuff, and you use Ross Lyon's quote again, let the cobblers cobble.
Let the cobblers cobble.
And yeah, it's a bit of that, you know. Let Damien Hardwick assess what he thinks is best for Richmond and the list and the style they want to play, and then trust the people around him to help implement that.
It was amazing vulnerability, Whitey, considering the position he found himself in at the end of last season with the Focus on Footy group trying to take over the world, and his position being in unbelievable, a question mark on his position there at the Richmond Footy Club. To have that awareness and be able to articulate that to I'm sure, the board at the time, saying I wasn't the coach I want to be, made himself amazingly vulnerable.
I think it was just great to see him be so honest. I think first and foremost, if he didn't have it 2 years left on his contract at the end of last year, he wouldn't be coaching Richmond this year.
That's right.
Let's be honest. That just wouldn't be the case. But what it has shown, and still there's still half the season to play out here with Richmond. But what it shows is that the easy option is just to sack the coach and blame the coach and move on to the next one. But what had happened with Richmond was that they had got to 3 consecutive final series under Damien Hardwick. So the view of Richmond was that Damien can coach. There's no disputing the fact that Damien can coach. Had he lost his way, I'm not sure whether it was quite that extreme, but as Damien said, there were things he needed to improve. So what Richmond went and did was that they went and changed their assistant coaches. They went and got Neil Baum to help in a lot of areas that Damien needed help in, to give him the chance to coach. Very similar to the Mark Thompson situation at Geelong. So what it has shown is that you don't have to just sack the coach and start again. You can actually tinker or make changes within the football club and still succeed. So I think it's a really good template moving forward that you don't necessarily just have to sack the coach when things aren't going well.
Well, I think as you rightly pointed out, he got them to 3 finals campaigns. So that's a pretty good opportunity of result for him. And considering Richmond's form in the previous 30 years, they've had made a lot of consecutive finals campaigns. So he did do a good job in that regard. Now, they lost all 3 finals, and that seemed to be the criticism. Then, of course, they had the annus horribilis almost last year, where it was all a disaster for the Tigers. But one sunny day doesn't make a summer, but one cloudy day doesn't make a winter either. And that's what the Tiger board seemed to have understood last year when they were able to, A, gain control of the footy club again, then B, support him with the right people. I think it goes to show everyone in the footy world, and including the supporters, that one man, one person, isn't the key to everything. You need to have a really good support structure and a good framework of leaders and leadership to get a club going in the right direction.
Absolutely, and that it is a coaching team. Now, if my view was that I didn't think Damien Hardwick, based on what had happened last year, was going to be the man to be able to get Richmond back up near the top again.
Mm.
But he's proven to a point me wrong, that with a different support group, a different group of assistant coaches around him that can give him some new and fresh ideas, that he could still potentially get the best out of Richmond. I think we've got to be a little bit careful in making snap judgments on teams at round 12, 13 or 14. There's still a fair bit of the season that needs to play out, and Damien still has a lot to prove to be able to coach winning finals and coach
close games.
Yeah, so there's still things that he needs to tick off that he's had troubles with in the past, but they're clearly playing better than what they were last year.
Is there a lesson in that sort of honesty and openness from coaches to the football public? Is there something that a lot of coaches in the competition could benefit from, Jim? Because I thought he came across last night unbelievably, the way he just opened himself up. You know what? I'm not perfect. I had a real good look at myself last year. I wasn't who I wanted to be. I think I've benefited from that now, and you can see the results in the way I'm coaching.
Well, it makes him human, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's a really good statement, I reckon. It does. It made him human.
Yeah, and if people didn't hear it or watch it last night on the Herald Sun, they've got the article which has all those quotes he's saying. When you read it, you get drawn in, and you believe what he's saying. A bit like what Whitey just said, he understood it was him first being the head coach, and that he actually had to make some adjustments and actually trust people around him. And I think the important thing for Richmond was identifying the fact that he actually had the talent there. Sometimes you get a bit close to it, and then people go, well, let's sack the coach and reboot and start again. And so they've obviously identified it. We've got the ability, we've got the talent, but it just needs to be harnessed in a different direction. And I was a bit like you, Whitey. I thought if they rolled out the same style of football that they played in the last 2 years, we'd be talking Richmond a bottom four side.
Yep.
But the fact they went, well, we don't have those players on the list, and that way is being sort of, I guess, our football way has been cracked by other oppositions. They know how to other teams. They know how to play against us, and we're seeing something completely different from Richmond, which is they're taking the ball forward a lot more. They're not kicking it sideways as much out of the back half. They're playing a lot smaller forward line, so then they have to get it in quicker. Different structures, and it's good to see they're trying new things.
Oh, I think it was fantastic last night from Damien Hardwick, and I think Richmond are benefiting from what he did last season, and he was able to articulate that beautifully on the
couch. He's evolving as a coach.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Now, Nathan Buckley's another one that had a good chat last night on Footy Classified. We'll get to that a little bit later, and possibly with BJ Goddard and Scotty Gallen, because it dealt with football clubs' relationship with the media and
U
access
types.
To players.
U-types.
U-types, Bartel, you media types.
U-types.
and it was a fascinating conversation, and I think it opens up a whole lot of questions and discussion points that we should hit on this morning. So we'll do that a little bit later on this morning with BJ and with Scotty Gallen as well, because it's worthwhile chatting about. But 29-7, let's get to Greg in Williamstown on the open line, 1-300-652-927. Good morning, Greg.
Morning, guys. Dyke Hudson-Kilda, as Whitey well knows, just absolutely puzzles me why Hickey isn't rucking. I know he got injured for a bit when they so-called rested him, then put him back to Sandringham. Like, he's just got so much more upside than Longo. It's not funny. Like, Longo gets you two kicks a game, maybe half a dozen handballs that the opposition will probably intercept anyway. He doesn't pick his opposition ruckman up. And Hickey could get you 20 possessions and a goal or two a game, plus another 10 or so marks. So I just think that's the land shift that St Kilda have to make if they're going to have an impact for the rest of the year.
So I'm taking Greg, you're not a Longa fan.
No. Well, he hasn't got the tank
that
Hickey's got, for one.
He's been pretty competitive. He's more that competitive style ruckman. Yeah, he's more in the mould of, I'm not saying he is these players, but he's the Nankervis Mumford, where they compete hard for the throw-in ball up, and then they sort of scrap around the contest, isn't he, Whitey?
Yeah, exactly right. And I think, Greg, we've spoken about this a couple of times with Hickey and Longer, and Half, it's one of those things that they've got two good ruckmen that both want to ruck for 80, 90% of the time, and neither are particularly good at going forward and providing something different. So you can only play one of them. And it's almost like it's going to be the point where they play half the season each.
And the other problem is they've essentially got four tall forwards already, St Kilda.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, Rewalt, Membry, McCartan, and Bruce.
The decision is, and they've got two ruckmen, but they're very different ruckmen. And Greg's spot on.
Yes.
I did some numbers on these ruckmen two rounds ago, round 11. From a clearance differential point of view, in ruckmen in the competition, it was, if you wanted to win clearances, you play Billy Longer.
Yep.
If you wanted to get some impact around the ground, you play Tom Hickey. Billy Longer's clearance differential numbers, when he's rucking for St Kilda two rounds ago, I haven't done the updated ones, they were plus 7.5 clearances against their opposition, which is number two in the competition. When Tom Hickey was rucking at this stage, they were minus 5.5, which was 18th.
Well, this is compelling.
This
stats.
Is data.
So that's,
how about that
that's
for
a,
data?
That's a 13 clearance differential between Tom Hickey and Billy Longer against their opposition. So it's almost a system. That's a system question as to who they want to select for which team they're up against. Billy Longer plays when you need the clearances. Tom Hickey might have to play when you want to have more impact around the ground.
I was going to suggest, Jimmy, that we should give Greg a prize just for ringing up and putting an interesting topic to the table. I think Daniel should get the prize.
It's 6:30 on a Tuesday. What do you like at lunchtime?
Mate, I am smoking at lunchtime.
And the other problem, I know the music's playing. The other problem, Greg, when you got Hickey and Longer, is if you do trade one of them off and then Longer does a knee in round two, what are you going to do?
Oh, that's classic ruckman, isn't it?
What about these names? Roy Emerson, Ken Rosewall, John Newcomb, Phil Dent. Well, you can add Alexi Popperin to it because he was the boys' French Open champion just last week, a new star in Australian tennis, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club on RSN 927. Good morning, Alexi.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're going really well, thank you, pal. We appreciate your time. Has it sunk in yet, the fact that you're able to win the French Open boys' title?
Oh, it's only just starting to sink in. It was a massive achievement, massive week for me. A lot of hard work put in, but now I'm starting to finally realise what I've done, and I'm starting to enjoy it a lot.
You beat Spain's Nicola Kuhn 7-6, 6-3 to become the first boys' champion in Australia or Australian tennis since Phil Dent in 1968, 49 years ago. When you go to a tournament like that and you're the number three seed, do you have that history in the back of your mind as to wanting to be that next guy and thinking you're a chance?
I didn't even know about any of the history when I went into the tournament. I was only told in the semifinals that I've got a chance of making history. But when I went into the tournament, I was solely focused on the first round and then the second round and then so on. But only until the semifinals is when I realised that I was starting to make some noise in the history department.
And did that start to make you a little bit more nervous?
No, it actually made me more anxious to get out on court. I like the challenge, and I like the, you know, the opportunity to play under this pressure.
Tell me, Alexi, why clay? Why is clay the surface that you love playing on? Because from an Australian point of view, well, in the history, it's always been grass and, to a lesser extent, hard court. But why clay?
Oh, well, I've practically been brought up on clay. I've been training on clay for the past 7 years. So, you know, just training, the training routines on clay have been helping me a lot. But also, I think it suits my game a lot. Because I don't go forward as much as usually big guys go forward. I grind from the back with my powerful ground strokes and big serves. So, you know, clay I think suits me a lot. Also with the heaviness, with the heavy shots I hit. So, you know, just clay's my court.
To our listeners, I'd love you to explain exactly your upbringing, because it is very different to the normal path through from Australian tennis player. You've spent a lot of time overseas in your short life. Can you explain exactly where you've been and what you've been doing?
Well, I was born in Sydney. I lived there for the first 8 years of my life. And then we moved to Dubai for 2 years. And then we moved to Spain, and I've been living in Spain ever since. I lived in Alicante for 5 years, and then 2 years ago I moved down south to Marbella.
So you've played a fair bit of tennis, of course, over there. The Dubai experience, what was it like growing up in Dubai, only for a couple of years, but trying to be an elite player, elite athlete at a young age, how much work could you get in over there in Dubai?
Oh, you know, I was going to school every morning. I was a normal kid in Dubai, but then after school is when the work started kicking in, is when I started hitting the tennis courts. I was only at home. I only got home until 10 o'clock, so I was out training until 10 o'clock. So, you know, all the work, all the hard work I put in when I was a kid in Dubai helped me a lot.
So when you're coming up through the ranks and you know you're a world-class young tennis player, do you give yourself goals? I mean, do you set goals at the start of the year about tournaments you want to win or not, someone you want to beat? How does it work from a junior boys' perspective about your goals through a year?
Yeah, definitely. I post so many goals to myself. In training and also in tournaments. So the goal for me this year was to win at least one slam, and French Open was the slam I wanted to win the most, along with Australian Open, but that didn't work out. But French Open after Australian Open was what I set my goal on. And, you know, it worked, and now my goal is to break into the top 500 at the end of this year, or 400, or go as high as I can in the ATP rankings and see what the future holds.
Brendan Goddard on The Breakfast Club on The Inner Sanctum. He's back again today. Good morning to you, BJ.
Morning, Half. How are you?
Very well, thank you, mate. Looking refreshed, rejuvenated, ready to go after a couple of days off.
A few days up in Noosa.
No, oh, nice.
Didn't get a tan or anything. Didn't get a tan the best of times, but copped a bit of the storm up there, unfortunately. But,
didn't get a chance to sneak onto the golf course. Everyone knows you love your golf.
No, didn't sneak on, actually. Snuck on the other day on Sunday, but the 4 days off was purely just family time.
I want to talk about the pretzel gate type situation.
Pretzel gate. We're still talking about this.
No, but what it represents, because we haven't spoken to you since, that you've played 300 games now, so you haven't got long left, but I sense that you feel that you've got a team that can do something pretty special, but the clock is ticking, and it's that balance between what is possible. And I sense that you feel that something pretty special could be possible, but it's that balance between all the players coming back, the young exciting players you've got, it's patience, but it's also about the now as well. I don't know because I liked what you did.
Is that what you read?
No, but I like what you did, because no. This is, we're playing the Giants. We're here to win, not just to be competitive. Now that was last year. It's about winning now, and this team should be winning.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no doubt. But I think that's where we become frustrated, and I become frustrated, is because our best is clearly good enough.
Exactly.
But like most teams, or most average to good teams struggle with, is that finding that consistency and being able to repeat it every week. That comes down to the experience of the group. And then you look at games played and all that kind of thing. So I know we're still probably not in a, in that window where it's we should be somewhat like demanding that from everyone. There is still a number of guys and a large group that have played under 50 games and still finding their feet. But there is a vast majority of us that are really experienced and played the footy for a long time. So we're still trying to find that consistency, which then will take us to the next level, because now it's pretty clear and evident that our good is good enough. So now it's just trying to bridge that gap between our best and our worst, which I said all average to good teams struggle yeah. with, and that's what makes great teams great.
But on Whitey's point, do you feel like, and you said you need to balance out, you get a little impatient because you're clearly a very driven player, and that's what's made your career extremely successful. Do you want it now?
Yeah. Of course we want it now. Everyone wants it now,
But what I'm saying is, and I think it's the Whitey's point, is you can't sort of wait for another 2 to 3 year build.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can't. But I haven't really looked at it like that. I think, yeah, I'm being honest with our review of our list and where we're at, and that's why I said if I didn't think we weren't a chance to make finals and go deep into finals, then I probably, wouldn't be as kind of so intense. But there is that expectation of myself, but then I'm kind of contradicting myself based on what I said before. But, yeah, so we do have an expectation in the footy club.
I reckon it's a bit of a mode thing as well, Half, with Essendon, in that they're coming out of a year where it didn't really matter whether they won or lost. It was just playing.
Yeah.
Whereas
I think that's only external, though. There's not that view internally.
No, but the urgency in those key moments that when it counts, that you've got to get back to that intensity and that urgency for the moment that it actually really does count, as opposed to probably subliminally you were just playing last year.
Yeah.
I reckon there've been a few key moments like, come on, it actually counts now. This is really important.
Yeah.
As opposed to, if it doesn't happen, you're all competitive beast, you want to win, but those key moments didn't have the same sort of ramifications they have now.
I think it goes back to Brendan's comment before about the expectation, because it was totally different last year.
Yeah, that's totally exactly different. Right.
Not only from the external world, but even just internally, I'm sure, as well. Even though you compete and you want to win, the expectations were different. So I think that plays a part in your mindset as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that was evident through the whole footy club. Even Woosh's approach last year was along those lines, even though he didn't verbally say that.
Yeah.
But his expectations were really, really low, as we all, and it's about a development stage. And now you can see with the guys coming back in the pre-season, we just had the expectations then risen. And then when you do look at us early days, when the guys return, when you look at us on paper and games played and the experience coming back, then there's this rise in expectation, which is understandable. Yeah. But at sometimes it can be detrimental to your game to have that higher expectation. Yeah. So that's why we keep...
It's not just a flick of a switch. It's actually... It still has to be a growth thing.
Yeah.
Scotty, I want to talk media and relationships with football clubs and with players. Nathan Buckley on Classified last night was compelling viewing on this discussion point. Craig Hutchison, of course, is a big proponent for open access to Australian rules footballers and the game, so that the fans get as much information as they want. It was a really interesting back and forth. Gary Lyon was part of the discussion as well last night. Let's have a listen to one part of it where Nathan Buckley was talking about trust issues between football clubs and the media.
I feel like we are very accessible. Our players are accessible.
But if it was...
Where?
When?
On our terms, mate, not on yours.
The open accessibility is a worldwide, on much bigger scale than...
And you've seen it. You've been over and had a look at it.
So what is the downside of that?
What are they earning?
But how is it?
Well, we're getting there.
We live in a small country, and we're all here to grow the game. It's actually against journalistic competitiveness. The better thing for the game to do is to make and open the doors. And I'm really passionate about this. Because
is that a paranoia about the media? Have you got an issue?
I don't think the media can be trusted.
Right,
with
now,
now. I'm glad you raised this.
Now we're getting
The distrust between media and clubs is born out of lack of accessibility.
No, it's born out of who you allow to be to sit at the pinnacle of your media.
You open the doors every day and you'll find people having a conversation, hopefully maturely like this, every day and turning up and discussing what they've written about you and what they haven't. And human relationships form. At the moment, there's a breakdown of communication and relationships.
There is. I'll put my player's hat on. I couldn't trust the media. What's your overall perspective on the media?
Well, I can talk for 10 minutes, 12 minutes in a press conference, and I know the line that will be used. Yes. And it won't be representative of what I've said in the press conference. Mm. And people don't have time and won't go to, say, the website to absorb the whole 10 or 12 minutes of a post-match or of a midweek press conference. So the little grabs that you use are not always representative of reality. And the media is responsible for how you use those grabs and how you create reality, because it's very far away from where it actually sits.
That's just part of it. I'll play another bit shortly. But your initial reactions to that, Scotland? And you too, Whitey, because you're in this game right up to your eyeballs. You've got a media training business. What did you make of that from the coach of the Magpies last night?
He started well and then he got into a hole. The, you know, how much are they paid? So they get paid more. That's why America, there should be access. Trust issues. Well, that, I think he was getting to a personal issue he's got with a couple of journos. But, I mean, Craig Hutchison's right. To avoid trust issues, you have an open door policy once a week. In you go, yeah, boy, and the footballers would get the hang of it. They understand. And they don't, the journos won't go to every player. But then it builds a, not a trust, but an acceptance that this is how we now roll. So if you've kicked 10, they'll be in front of you on the Monday. If you've had your worst game ever, well, you've got to front up and talk about it. It breeds trust. Yeah. And acceptance, and then it's easier for everyone. This is the problem. There's a grab about, you know, clubs want to control the message. And yes. Bucks basically said that. We want to control on
our own.
Let's
have a listen to that. We've got that grab as well. We'll throw that in now and just so we've got the full picture.
I think they're cringeworthy when you doorstop a player or a coach.
Yeah, but then do something about it, Nathan. Like, it's one thing to sit back and say that's not on, but actually create an environment. And the view that the AFL haven't mandated it, honestly, that doesn't cut it with me. Like,
Our job is to communicate with our members and to bring them as close to the football club as we can, because we don't have the old... You're not rubbing skin with the old players the way that you might have 20, 30 years ago. There's no aftermatch like there used to be. So we communicate with our fans through our digital media, and we try and make our players as accessible as possible.
We have plenty of people...
No, to our supporters.
You asking the questions that the rest of the footy world want to have answered?
Well, our job isn't... my job as a senior coach is not to increase our reach from a media perspective. My job is to prepare the team to play winning football. And if my players are uncomfortable walking into work because they're getting doorstopped and they've got a camera shoved in their face, that's not great.
Open the doors
up. We will. We'll get a car park where you guys can't get in, and that would be a lot better.
But see, like you're a revered figure in our game.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you take
that? Mate, I feel uncomfortable when someone tries to doorstop me. It's not right. Don't do it.
It shouldn't happen. But it's created by the clubs who have been restrictive in their access.
It's created by the competition that you guys have created for yourself. Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 10, Try and get a grab that no one else is going to get, and then we have some value and we'll plug that within an inch of its life.
That is true.
Because have a look at this uncomfortable player who's been asked a question that he really doesn't want to answer at this point. If we want him to answer it, we'll put him up.
He's got some points. They both have points. It sounds like out of that, Scotty, that everyone agrees on the middle point, but neither of them want to concede ground to come to it. So Bucks says, don't doorstop. This is very simplifying everything that was said. And Bucks says, don't doorstop, but then Hutchie is saying, we'll throw the doors out open, but both of them don't want to actually concede their anchor points.
No one wants to doorstop.
So to get to that middle point, who, I guess, called blinks first and adjusts the way they're doing business.
The club should, because controlling message, you know, will make the players available who and when we want to. I mean, this is the whole crux of the issue, as Hutchison said. you create this world where players are uncomfortable if they're used to it. If it's weekly, they know they're going to get asked whatever. It's just in their psyche, and it's not.
Whitey, listening to that last night and again this morning, what was your take being in the game?
The problem is football departments in football clubs. That's the biggest problem, because they have this, generally, they have this obsession that the media is the enemy and that they don't want their players tripped up on things that might give ammunition to the opposition and all that sort of thing. And it's all a lot of rubbish. Let the players talk. I'm sure the players would have no issues in talking to the media in general. And the doorstops would stop if players were accessible to the media on a regular basis. Because what Nathan was saying last night is right, is that there's this feeling in the general media that you've got to get unique content. But what's happened is, and this is where it's changed, and I understand where the listeners to this, they're going to take the side of the football clubs and they're going to take the side of Nathan Buckley, and I understand that. We've got to go back to the whole purpose of what the media is about. The purpose of the media is to create interest in the games that are played on the weekend. So the whole purpose of what we do on our show is to share the stories in the game, to get to know the players in the game, as we do with Brendan Goddard this morning, and is to create characters in the game so that it's not just about what the score is on the weekend, it's all the stories around the game. And that's what is created during the week. That's what creates superstars in the game. That's what creates characters. That's what creates players, the ability to make the money that they make, is because the media's job is to create the stories. And there are going to be times where there's going to be trust issues, and I get that. But what has happened is that the AFL clubs want to control the message.
Yep.
So the AFL clubs want to have their own media departments and their own internet sites where they'll put what they want to put up there. But the general media don't want that. They don't want the controlled message. They want to be able to create the stories that are unique to them. So that's why you're going to get this disconnect, because the media are not going to put up, oh, well, this is what was said on the website in the Herald Sun. So what happens? Everything becomes opinion, because that becomes news, because that's unique. It's not what you're going to hear on a website. You're going to read in the paper, you'll read an opinion, not a story or not an injury story.
Interesting tweet
going to happen
last night from a man in the industry, Luke Homesby, who's been in the game for a while. Keep this in mind, he says on Twitter. You would never have heard Nathan Buckley give that much insight on that topic on Collingwood's website.
Exactly.
Which I thought was a poignant tweet.
And this is the thing, it's a controlled message.
How much of that is to control the story, and how much is it for revenue and marketing opportunities these days with the digital media platforms?
Control the story.
Yeah.
I think the underlying issue is these people think media affects performance.
Yeah.
Bottom line, that's what they think,
yeah.
Which is outdated. This generation of kids, Thomas Buck, Thomas Exhibit Buck. A,
Patrick,
Instagram.
Patrick Dangerfield.
Patrick Dangerfield, best player in the land.
So the interesting thing from the Tom Bug thing, from who are the ones that were upset and worried about that?
Not Tom Bug, not his teammates. No.
And not the media. The people that were upset were the Bulldogs and Melbourne. So it wasn't the media that were, the media encouraged the fact that Tom Bug had personality and was prepared to say something, but it was Simon Goodwin that was, oh no, geez, oh, that might fire up Jason Johannesson, that might fire up the Bulldogs. What if we lose? How will that look? The Bulldogs outraged that someone might put, are you ready, Jason? Wow, gee, I think he might be ready. You know, just reckon with what's happened the last couple of weeks, he might be ready, that there might be someone that might try and get in his face.
Anthony Moore is the main man at Basketball Australia, is the CEO. He's been good enough to join us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Anthony.
Hey, Daniel. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, as always. Big news last week with the IOC announcing that 3-on-3 basketball will be in the next Olympic Games. How big is that for the game?
Really exciting for us. It's an opportunity for our sport to have another full round of medals available. So as a team sport, one of your challenges, you know, you're going after, you know, one of three medals, and swimming and ass and all of the big discipline sports have a multitude of medals to go after. So for basketball to get a second one, it's a really, really significant thing for our sport.
So how do you select the 3-on-3 side for Australia? Is it a matter of just picking three players who don't make the, you know, the full five aside, or is there a round robin competition?
Specials? Yeah, it's a really good question. So, I mean, naturally you might think, well, you take 12 players in the 5-on-5, so do you pick, you know, players 13 through, you know, 16, just take four along. it's a really different version of the sport. So it's not necessarily we would take Bogut, Simmons, and Exum or any combination of those guys.
That'd be good though.
But not bad. But it's really quick and physical, and it's for the long shooters and those that can get to the basket really, really quickly. So it's a really tough and physical version of the game. So for us, it's about picking the best style of athlete for that. But more importantly, the way FIBA, our international federation, has actually set up the competition, we actually have to qualify to make the Olympics is through grassroots participation events where you're hosting, as a nation, as many three-on-three tournaments as possible to get your ranking points up. So they actually take, they'll take a selection of the top 20 globally ranked nations to the Olympics. To put that in some context for you, on the men's side, we're ranked 55th in the world. And on the women's side, we're currently ranked 42nd. So we've got a long way to go as a sport to actually get the number of, registered tournaments through, the FIBA system up and running so that we can actually get our total ranking points up and our athletes qualified to actually go to the game.
Well, Harford, White, Bartell would be a great three.
I was one of the great lunchtime 3-on-3 players.
Oh, I think we're a bit short, but we'd be good in the low post with your powerful glutes.
My powerful glutes, yeah.
But you touched on, you touched on Andrew Bogut. Obviously, in the latter stages of his career, and he's got some injury problems, how important is he to the Olympic campaign? Is it just let him get right and ready and he can sort of, use a better word, parachute his way into the side, or does he need to play all the build-up Olympic sort of qualifying games?
Yeah, I think Andrew really showed his what he was worth for us in the Oceania Championship game, which was our Olympic qualifier. We had the Rod Laver game, and then he barely could walk the day after that, and came across late over to Wellington to play that one, and just dominated the game. And then he was just absolutely instrumental in Rio, both on the court and off. So for Andrew, it's giving him every opportunity to be right and get fit and make himself available. The good part for me as a CEO is I don't get to pick the team. I just make sure the sport's ticking along. So that's up to Andre Lamanis and Luke Longley and the coaching guys to really work out what the best talent available is for those. But we've got a new qualification system for the World Cup, which is in China in 2019. So that kicks off in November this year. We'll be hosting three matches across a 6-month period before we then go into the second round. So we've got lots and lots of Australian Boomers matches in Australia coming up. And for us, in November, February, means we've got to work on a broader group of athletes. So it's really looking at the NBL guys and our European-based Boomers. So, coaches actually get to look at a really broad talent base. And some of those are then maybe available for 3-on-3 down the track as well.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.